The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Everyone's always focused on the Wild West, fellas, but don't sleep on the East Coast. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to First Take. Thank you so much for being with us. Stephen A. Smith, Max Kellerman, I'm Molly Karam-Rose. Fellas, hope you had a fabulous weekend. A ton of great hoops, and that's where I want to start, but with the NBA. LaMarcus Aldridge, according to Woj, is expected to become the latest member of the Nets roster, taking his talents to Brooklyn. Aldridge was averaging just over 13 points per game for San Antonio before his buyout. Gentlemen, take a look at the Nets squad. Please just marinate on these names, would you? Kyrie Irving, James Harden, Kevin Durant, Blake Griffin, LaMarcus Aldridge, that's just to name a few, all joining forces for a playoff run. Brooklyn seems to be heading for Max's super-duper team level, as he calls it. But Stephen A., are you getting turned off by the Nets stacking the deck here?
I am. And here's my thing, Max and Molly. This is what's rubbing me the wrong way. It's not the KD, Kyrie, James Harden thing. I got that. That's Lethal Weapon 3. I'm good with that, Max. It's not a problem. But when the names Blake Griffin and LaMarcus Aldridge come to my mind, that's what really irritates me about this. And here's why. Because I'm looking at guys. I remember the last 2 years in Portland, LaMarcus Aldridge averaging 23 a game. And he was supposed to be that glue, you know, with Tim Duncan fading away into the twilight before he was going to retire with Kawhi Leonard being in, all of that stuff. He was supposed to be that guy. Blake Griffin, remember? I mean, come on now. Remember Lob City? Remember all of that? You were there.
I was there
you
for
were
that.
Hosting yep. You was hosting a radio show in L.A. for 6 years. You remember Lob City? He was the cornerstone of the franchise. Both of them came up short. Both of them came up short. Never even been in the conference finals for crying out loud, okay? Even though I think LaMarcus Aldridge was at least once in San Antonio. I'm just saying, when I look at that, and then I see you jumping on this bandwagon, it's something that turns me off about that, because you were supposed to be one of those dudes. You were supposed to be one of those dudes who was the cornerstone of the franchise, that was leading the team to the promised land, as opposed to just sitting up there and just chilling out and having a ring slit on your finger. Right? You know, that's what I'm talking about. That's a turnoff for me. And again, with Kevin Durant, it's not fair, and I'll openly admit that to bring this up, but it's apropos only from the standpoint of just paying attention to history in that regard. When he went to Golden State, he went there because he couldn't capture the chip in OKC playing with Russell Westbrook. But when he went to Golden State, he was the man. He was still the best. Even though Steph Curry's the greatest shooter we've ever seen in our lifetime, and him and Klay Thompson are the best shooting backcourt we've ever seen in our lifetime, Kevin Durant was still the best player on that team. We understand how lethal he was. Blake Griffin has fallen off significantly, and to the point where he gets a dunk and we're celebrating. It's damn near back page news. Okay, and now LaMarcus Aldridge, who just weaned out in San Antonio, suddenly he's on this team. And I'm just like, damn, what's next? We gonna get the best ball boy in the NBA too? I mean, what the hell is next, for crying out loud? That's how I look at it, and that's the turnoff portion. If those dudes didn't capture a chip, but was still lethal in terms of being straight up ballers, Max, I would have a completely different mentality. But the drop-off has been so precipitous. The fact that they get to – they are about to get a ring.
Right.
Under those conditions. I'm like, oh,
but
damn.
That's not you getting turned off by the Nets.
That's right.
That's you getting turned off by the players.
Right.
Right. Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Then that's fine. I was going to say, if you're the Nets ain't getting LaMarcus Aldridge and Blake Griffin. They're getting the remains of LaMarcus Aldridge and Blake Griffin. Let's be honest. What does LaMarcus Aldridge do well right now? Who's he going to get? He's a 20-minute-a-game player. He can play basketball, sure, but he ain't LaMarcus Aldridge anymore. And by the way, he never really could shoot the three. He was like a deep mid-range shooter. It's one of the reasons he and DeRozan. It's one of the reasons the Spurs weren't better with those guys in a three-point shooting league. They're taking shots that are just as difficult to hit, but you only get 2 points instead of three if you make them. And LaMarcus Aldridge isn't even that guy anymore. He's a faded version of himself. And Blake Griffin, you know, who knows what you're getting? Likely not much. So I'm not mad at the Nets or at KD. You talk about like, this is the second time it's happened for KD. Now, this is totally different for me with KD. KD in Golden State couldn't get by Golden State, and then Golden State couldn't get by LeBron. So they joined forces. They're like, that's really about LeBron. Let's beat this guy somehow. Golden State won 73 games. The all-time record in the regular season came, what, a possession or two away of winning the championship? And then added an MVP player in KD? Mm-hmm. They'd have destroyed everyone with someone less than KD because mm-hmm. they were already that stacked. That doesn't prove anything to me, KD. I don't care if you won finals MVP. How could you not? You don't have to worry about Clay and Steph and everybody. This is different. KD went to Brooklyn off an Achilles, catastrophic injury, never knowing if you're going to be the same again. Brings Kyrie at first, went a year like that. Then they trade for Harden. There was no guarantee Harden and Kyrie would even be able to share a backcourt. You know, like, you have to take your hat off to those guys the way they figured out the chemistry, and it took them like a week. So I'm not going to be down on KD for surrounding himself with talent, for building a team the way LeBron did in Miami.
Right.
That's fine. And as far as these dudes joining him, you know, you mentioned Blake. You can mention LaMarcus Aldridge. You can mention DeAndre Jordan. Nick Claxton may be the guy you want there. I mean, like, it's not like they have a lot. It's name brands. It's not great players anymore in terms of these buyout types they're getting right now.
Well, see, Max Kellerman, you went someplace where I wanted to go. I just wanted you to go first and because you know me. There's a method to my madness. Because you know who I ultimately blame for all of this? I blame LeBron James. It's all his fault. It's all his fault, okay? First of all, you go to it is hypocritical of me because even though I didn't like what happened, it was in South Beach. So why would I complain about having to go to South Beach? I mean, come on now. You know, so I'm just throwing myself out on Front Street and that. I got it. But remember when they won the championship in Cleveland? And then the next year he came back. You had D-Wade to the mix. You had Deron Williams to the mix as well. You tried to do something like that in order to repeat as champions. KD ultimately hijacks your run because what does he do? He goes to Golden State. And now he's one up you there. And then he won back-to-back titles. Should have won three. Would have had a three-peat had he not torn his Achilles. Would have easily had a three-peat without question. Okay. But then after that, what happens? Now he comes to Brooklyn. And this is what he's doing. So you've got a situation where LeBron has opened the floodgates. Thank God. Hopefully AD will be back. He'll be healthy because with him and LeBron and adding Andrew Drummond, I think Andrew Drummond is a big pickup, which we'll get into. But in the end, what it comes down to, thank God there's some level of competition. Because, see, that's the biggest thing. When I was appeared with KD on a boardroom on this show on ESPN Plus from before, when I appeared on there, okay, what I explained was it's all about competition. I'm old school, man. I grew up watching the NBA. I've been watching it. I've been covering the NBA for 26, 27 years. I've been watching it all my life pretty much. I love the NBA, and I love competition. And you want to see people wanting to go against one another. And there's this culture where everybody's trying to join one another. And that goes against everything that I'm about. And I think that KD was definitely more significant because you joined a juggernaut. What, they had won 73 games, and you joined a juggernaut.
But what Magic really showed these dudes is...
Magic?
LeBron really showed... I'm going to talk about Magic in a second. What LeBron really showed these dudes, including KD,
right,
is that we can do the same thing the teams are doing. Because I think... The reason I said Magic is I think about the Lakers in 79-80. That's Magic's rookie year, right? It's him and Kareem.
Okay.
And,
but they
and,
drafted Worthy.
I'm not talking about Worthy, though.
Okay.
I'm talking about Jamal Wilkes, and I'm talking about...
He was already on the squad, right?
Norm Nixon, right.
Nixon was already there.
That's right. And then they trade for Spencer Haywood, right?
But my point is, it was draft, though.
Okay. My point is what LeBron showed the world and other players like KD is, you see the way the teams are the boss and the GMs put together? Because the Lakers had a super-duper team. Stephen A., did they need Spencer Haywood? Like, they needed to grab an all-star power forward to go with all-time great center. They didn't need to do it, but they did it. And what LeBron showed KD is we can do that, too. I'm going to take Chris Bosh. Me and Wade and Chris Bosh are going to do it. KD said, bet. I'll just go and join Golden State. Oh, those aren't the rules? Bet. I'll make my own team. Me, Kyrie, and Harden. What's the difference between him doing that and a GM doing that in L.A.?
I understand that. But what I'm trying to tell you is that the players themselves are the ones on the court competing. I'm not saying that the GMs, the executives don't compete out there. And I'm not faulting Sean Marks, who I think is doing an outstanding job. And I'm not faulting the Brooklyn Nets. I don't blame you. You could be all over me if I was doing that. I would do the same thing if I was them. LaMarcus Aldridge and Blake Griffin gave up about $20 million to get there, okay? They gave up about $20 million to end up on the roster.
An expensive ring.
There we go.
They're buying an expensive ring.
They're buying a ring. But what I'm saying is I'm not knocking Sean Marks, Steve Nash, Mike D'Antoni. I'm not knocking an organization. That's what you're trying to do. The players themselves, you are on the court competing. And I had five players text me this weekend. Oh, that's what we're doing now, Stephen A?
It's anti-competitive, that's what we, basically.
Because yes. They're saying it's anti-competitive. They're like, yeah. And you can guess who some of those are.
Both
they're like
this. Salty.
They text me. What? That's what we're doing now, Stephen A.
Why,
that's what I'm saying.
That's why Kawhi didn't go to the Lakers. Kawhi tried to compete against LeBron.
Yeah, no, that might make that, I might have to rethink
no
Kawhi. Because
speaking
of
the number
said.
Five.
Yeah.
The Nets have five players with at least five All-Star appearances, so that's pretty incredible. Only the Celtics did that back, that 2010 squad.
Everyone's
trying to get a chip.
Molly, repeat that.
With okay. Five players
so
with five
there's
All-Star
five. There's five players on the Nets with at least five All-Star appearances. Good there's Lord. Only one other team in history that did that, and that was that stacked Celtics squad back in the day, 2010, 2011. Everyone trying to get a chip, no clouds in my stones. Fellas, let's keep it rolling. Let's get to the team they face in the West, who you just mentioned. Defending champs, the Lakers making moves of their own, adding Andre Drummond. Stephen A., where did he go to college? Can't remember.
I can't either.
Was it Columbia?
Whatever.
Oh, yeah. No. Was it Columbia?
Drummond was posting 17 and 13 per night this season. You know what it is. Max, yeah. What do you think Drummond means to the Lakers?
It means, look, AD's got to come back. He can't just not. But AD doesn't have to be 100%. Now they're going to get out of the West. And part of that's going to be because what happens over the next month. This Lakers squad did not have enough to win very many games, as we could see, right? Schroeder is their best player by far, and they just don't have enough firepower to win. And LeBron and AD are going to be out for a while longer. What Andre Drummond can do in the meantime, guys, he's probably going to average just walking onto the club 20 and 15, right? Something like that. Because where's the scoring going to be?
At least 15.
Yeah, he grabs a lot. So, like, I know advanced analytics can tell you, but his impact on the game is limited because of X, Y, and Z. But he can play basketball. He's good at basketball, and he's big. So you have not a seven-footer, but somewhere in that area of a guy who can score and rebound and help keep you your head above water while you're waiting for the superstars to get back. That'll improve their record. And then when they do get back, Drummond either gives you great minutes as a backup five, or you play AD at the four with Drummond at the five, and you have twin towers, the Lakers will get out of the West, provided AD's at least 80% of what he normally is.
I totally agree with you there. There's no argument here in that regard. Let's understand something. Andre Drummond is a career 13.8 rebound per game player. 13.8 for his career. For his career. I'm looking at his numbers, Max. This dude has been in the league 10 years. The only time he has not averaged double digits in rebounds is his rookie year. The only time. The only time.
He messed around, gets you 17 boards a game.
This dude is a rebounding machine. And so when you look at it from that perspective, and a career 53.8% shooter from the field, shot about 49% in his 2 years with the Cavs. But, he plays around the basket. He ain't trying to take jump shots or anything like that. Rebounds, putbacks, that's what his specialty is. So when I look at it from that perspective, and your primary offensive players is LeBron James, along with Anthony Davis, and you're kicking it out to shooters, and you have a guy like this dude who's capable of giving you cleanup duty. And oh, by the way, of the 13.8 rebounds he's averaged in his career, Max, offensive rebounds, 4.7. Right. So you're talking about a guy.
Extra possessions.
Possessions cleans up. That's a huge, huge deal, particularly when you consider the number one team in the West right now is the Utah Jazz with Rudy Gobert. When you've got that as a consideration, when you've got the Joker as a consideration in Denver, when you've got Nurkic coming back and what have you, if you've got an additional big body, somebody who's physical and prioritizes rebounds, and getting you extra possessions, and more importantly, limiting other teams from getting possessions because he's snatching those boards. That puts more pressure on opposing offenses to be more
efficient against the Los Angeles Lakers, coached by Frank Vogel and his elite staff, whether it's you know, Hollins and Phil Handy and the rest of the crew and Lionel Hollins and those boys. The bottom line is you look at the Los Angeles Lakers, and I definitely think the acquisition of Drummond secures them coming out of the West for this season, assuming that Anthony Davis is going to be about 80% or better.
Especially after Denver makes a move and there are other teams that make moves. But there's another way to look at it that's kind of like from a broader perspective. The Lakers didn't have enough starting caliber players.
Yep.
They have two superstars, Schroeder, and no one else is really a starter. KCP is not quite a starting caliber player. Mm-hmm. He doesn't do any one thing well enough to start, right? There's a lot of things well enough to come off your bench. Kuzma's not a starting quality. Like, he's a rotation piece for sure.
Right.
I'm not dissing him. Like, he can play,
but
he's not a starter in the league. Drummond's a starter in the NBA.
Yeah.
And Schroeder's a starter. Now, all of a sudden, you look at the Lakers and you go, it's not just that they have two super-duper stars.
Right.
They have other guys who are starting caliber in their rotation.
Here's what makes it interesting. They're sending a message. You're not beating us in the interior. You're not doing anything against us. If you're going to beat us, it's going to have to be from the perimeter. Yep. Now, we look at the Clippers. For the most part, they're a perimeter team. We look at Phoenix. We look at Utah because of their ability to shoot threes. Even though you got Royce O'Neal and Rudy Gobert anchoring their defense on the perimeter and in the interior, offensively speaking, even though Rudy can give you something, they're primarily a shooting team. You're going to have to be able to hit perimeter shots in order to beat the Lakers. I don't believe that's going to be enough to beat LeBron James and Anthony Davis unless you are Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving. That is the only shot, as far as I'm concerned, that anybody's going to have to take out the Lakers.
Yeah, someone brought this up. I'm trying to remember who it was on my radio show, Max Kellerman Show, 2 p.m.
Eastern. Yes, 2 p.m. Eastern time.
ESPN Radio.
Yes, 2 to 4, right? 2 to 4 Eastern time, right?
That's right.
Okay,
LeBron and AD caused such matchup problems for everyone because you take a guy, you mentioned Royce O'Neal, excellent defender,
excellent.
The problem with LeBron and Rudy Gobert, the problem with LeBron and AD is that's not a matchup for LeBron and AD. These dudes are 6'8 and 6'11. And you need O'Neal to be 6'9 or 6'10, and you need two of them against the Lakers. The Drummond move is a strong move post deadline for a team like the Lakers to make. I think it solidifies them in the West.
Get it. Drummond has 44 20-20 games, guys, 29 more than anyone else since he entered the league. The Lakers did drop to fourth in the West right now over the weekend.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/firsttake. That's amazon.com/firsttake to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com. Fellas, to the NFL we go. Adam Schefter sharing this news on Twitter. The NFL is expected to expand the regular season schedule this week to 17 games. The league had played a 16-game regular season schedule since 1978, by far the longest stretch without a change in NFL history. Saints running back Alvin Kamara, meanwhile, sharing his thoughts on Twitter. Expletive, dumb as hell. Dan Orlovsky joining us now. Dan, thank you so much for being with us. Hope you had a fabulous weekend. You know the deal. I'm going to start with Stephen A. here, though. Stephen A., how do you think players should feel about 17 games?
Be the men that they are. Stop complaining about this. Last time I checked, this was the National Football League. It was collectively bargained. It was in a new collective bargaining agreement signed in March. Everybody knew it was coming. It's something that's been, hinted towards for years. Not only to mention that, but keep in mind that in the day and age where things are consistently modified in the interest of generating more revenue, the NFL hadn't changed from a 16-game schedule since 1978. Ladies and gentlemen, that's what is that, 43 years? What the hell is your problem? You know, get over it. You knew it was coming. Now, there's going to be one less preseason game. There's going to be one additional regular season game. We certainly understand that safety is a priority, and that should never be ignored, and that should never be shoved aside. Under no circumstances am I saying that. But adjustments are made all the time. Sometimes you see guys, in the NBA, for a perfect example, we call it load management, Max. That's what we call it, Dan Orlovsky. But guess what? You got guys that ain't playing every game. Now, certainly there's only 17 games in the NFL season, so chances are you don't want to hear that nonsense. But in the NFL, we see people getting injured all the time. We see games being missed by players all the time. What's wrong with taking a game off a rest? What's wrong with making sure that none of your players plays more than 16 games? Just because you as a coach has to coach 17 games, as an organization you have to play 17 games, doesn't mean all your starters have to play 17 games. You can sit up there and work that out. You got practice squad players. You got dudes on the scouting team. You got your starting lineup. You got your role players. You can work around one additional game. If it's going to generate revenue for you as well as the league and the public doesn't appear to mind it, then be the men that you are, grow the hell up, and accept the fact that this is what comes with it. You knew, because as players, you collectively bargained for this, and the NFL knew, you knew what the NFL wanted, you signed off on it, and that is that.
Well, I don't buy the collective bargaining argument, because they're bargaining against a monopoly for all intents and purposes. The NFL has a monopoly on professional football, really worldwide. If you're among the best football players in the world, mm-hmm. you're going to make the most money by far in the NFL, because they own football, basically, especially in North America. So they're always going to push for more games because it's more revenue for them. The owners don't have to work any harder. You know, every time the players are going to want something going forward, they're going to put that on the table. And eventually they'll get another game. They'll be 18 and 19. It'll never end. And here's the reason why. Because the owners understand the players are fungible commodities. When there were scab players in the early 80s, when I was a kid, Stephen A., the ratings took a hit. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't like they cut in half. They went down 20-something percent, something like that. People still watched football. And if careers get shorter for players, they're not going to care. They'll just get new players in there. And it's going to be hard to tell the difference in quality, because it's not that great between the very best and that next little level below. Maybe Dan Orlovsky can tell, but guys like you and me, it's going to look more or less the same. They understand that. So to hell with the players. They'll have shorter careers. They'll get more banged up. It's laughable when you talk about whether they're concerned for player safety. In boxing, they went from unlimited rounds of fights, right? Like until someone fell, to like 20 plus rounds. Then they cut it to 15 rounds, which we knew for many years. Now it's 12 rounds. That's worried about safety. Let's make these fights shorter and shorter, because it's dangerous to get hit so much. NFL's going in the opposite direction. Let's add more and more to the schedule. Now, Stephen A., I like your idea. If they want to add more games, they should institute rules that even if you have 17 and eventually 18 and 19 games, but each player can only play 15 games. Or 16 games, or 14 games. And you got to work the roster around that. Maybe you expand the rosters, creating more jobs, but you have to have some kind of companion rules to go along with the ever-expanding schedule. They will always want to expand the schedule to hell with the players, because that's how they'll make more money.
Yeah, I think 85% of the players in the NFL will be upset about this because there are the guys that aren't making all the money. 15% of your roster is made up of the kind of the guys that are going to see the growth of salary cap. What this will do will grow the salary cap. And so the highest paid players will receive more money. Those are the guys that are actually going to feel it in their wallet. And the league minimum guys are not going to feel the kind of the growth in revenue. But Stephen A., this is where I'm going to come after you a little bit. You can't say grow up and tell your feelings to move on. You can't say that to your knees and your ankles and your back and your ACLs. And that's what's going to feel the brunt of this is guys' bodies. You can't say, well, the NBA does load management. One game is in or out of the playoffs for so many teams in the NFL. In the NBA, when you play 82 games, you can load manage a game or two because you're not going to feel it when it comes to actually getting into the dance or not. The Dolphins were 10-6 last year, and they didn't get in. Sitting a quarterback or a big-time defensive lineman or a dynamic wide receiver could be the difference between getting in or getting out. So load management is not something that could factor into the NFL. Now, what is the trade-off for the players? That's the big question of this. Is there going to be – you talked about the one less preseason game. You know who's going to probably play the same amount of preseason snaps? Those league minimum guys. The starters and the high revenue guys are going to play the same amount of snaps, whether it's four games or three games. Is there going to be a significant change to the offseason? Is there going to be – when I got into the NFL 16 years ago, we started our offseason like March 20th, and we went all the way to July 4th. Right. That has even shortened. So are they going to do more Zoom? Is there going to be less mandatory minicamps, OTAs? But we can't sit here and say, well, just get over it. You can't tell an ACL to just get over it.
Okay, Dan Orlovsky, you finished? Do I get to respond to that?
You get to respond.
First of all, yes, the hell I can. I just did it. Do you know why I did it? Because the reality of the situation is on several fronts. Number one, you collectively bargained for it. You can dismiss that max all you want to, but that is a fact of life. You collectively bargained.
Time out.
You can always sit up there and say, well, what do they have? Because the NFL has a monopoly. Well, I assure you that there's a lot of things. There's a lot more things that the NFL owners want that they don't necessarily get because there's a collective bargaining negotiation and they got something to lose if you don't appease the players nearly enough, number one. Number two, the players want more money. Number three, I'm not saying say no to or get over it in ACL or anything like that. Let's not get literal like that. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is this, you as a player, correct me if I'm wrong, if you're paid for a 17-game NFL season, right, and you're injured and you can't play a particular game, you'll still get your game check. Now, obviously, you could get cut, you could get waived and things of that nature. We all understand that no matter what business that you're in. But the reality is that overall, the league doesn't get to police how you manufacture your way through the 17-game season. Coaches do this stuff all the time. General managers do this stuff all the time.
Yes, they do.
Wait a minute. Did Carson Wentz play most of the last five games of last season?
No,
he got benched. Did he get paid?
Yes,
he did. Excuse me. Did he play 16 games? No, he didn't. Did Jalen Hurts play 16 games? No, he didn't. There's plenty of teams. Did Mitchell Trubisky play 16 games? No, he didn't. I'm saying there's ways to work around it to make sure you put a product out on the field on Sunday. Alvin Kamara, I'm sure if he doesn't want to play 17 games, Sean Payton can figure out a way to make sure that he plays 16, not 17 games, but still get paid for 17 games and move forward. That's what I mean when I say get over it. There is a way organizations repeatedly and religiously show us how they know how to manipulate the rules, conjure up workarounds and get around. I promise you, I don't think you're going to see
Stephen
anybody play all 17 games.
League absolutely polices how teams get their health or build
their
roster.
They get around it.
You're only allowed 53 guys. You can only have 46 dressed on game day.
Do they get around it? Let me ask you a question. I got a better question for you because you're doing NFL Live and all of that stuff. By the way, good job with that. You'd need help today if you were going up against me because I'm going to tell you this right now. Are you trying to tell me that every game players play or rather the games that they miss every single time they weren't ready to play. They couldn't have played a game. They most certainly could have. They most certainly could have.
No, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that every single time. Yes,
I'm just saying it happened.
Some, you don't get.
You can work around.
There are some tactical decisions.
Right, you don't get paid per game.
I'd like to say something about this.
You don't get paid per game. That's my point.
I basically agree with you here, actually. But so I want to say something about this. The idea that the players want more money, here's how to get it, is a red herring. That's something that's meant to distract. Here's an easy way for the players to get more money. Take away the salary cap. Right? Like, why is labor capped in terms of what they make? So they're never going to do that. They won't subject themselves to free market forces. That's how they all made their fortunes, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. But now that they're in a league, they don't want to do that. Right. So they'll say, well, if you want more money, then we need to make more money too. And we're going to do it on the sweat of your labor, of course. And it's dangerous work. It's dangerous work. So, Stephen A., you'd be right if the contract stipulated that you're getting paid per game.
Right.
But the only reason we're conceptualizing it that way is because the owners have made it a point of principle for them, mm-hmm, that we're not giving up any of the percentage of the revenue that we already have. If you want more money, go make us more money.
I understand that. And I totally get that. But what I'm saying is, watching the NFL, we see week after week after week where players are missing games for all the right reasons. It's a violent sport. Take your rest. You might not be injured and incapable of playing. You might just need to give your body a break. All I'm saying is there are workarounds that take place. You just because it's a 17-game season doesn't mean that you as a player have to play all 17 games. You can work around that.
Why not do what Stephen A. is saying? Cap the number of games a player can play at, let's say, 16. You could have 20 games. You're just creating more jobs. Expand the rosters.
Because you have to settle down, fellas.
Oh, okay, so Stephen A., are you going to want your starting quarterback to only play 16 games? What game are you going to pick your starting quarterback to miss?
Figure it out.
Because that might be the game that you get
out
of the playoffs.
Year to year. But why are you acting like you can't understand it? I'll figure it out year to year.
Year to year?
Against New England, New England, I might have Dan Orlovsky. Against the Steelers, I might have Mac.
And what happens if you don't get in the playoffs because of that one game? We know that
no one's taking games off when it's a 17-game season.
You.
No one's taking games. No, it's just
watch.
Not going to happen.
Watch, that, Molly.
Stephen A.,
this isn't MLB.
Is a big difference.
This isn't the NBA.
Why?
There's no load management for quarterbacks in the NFL.
But wait, Molly, absolutely. You're right. But if the league had a rule that you could only play in so many games,
there's not going to be a rule.
That's what I'm saying.
The whole point is to get more money.
Molly said what she said. Molly said what she said. Molly said what she said. Said, I will sit here next season, and Molly's going to be like,
Stephen A.,
he was right because he's missing a game. I know
Stephen
he can play, but he's missing this game.
You're right on a lot of things.
I want you to watch.
Time, you're so wrong.
Stephen A., watch KG Bucket tonight.
All right, Dan, you need
tonight.
To go.
He's going to shoot it like I just shot on you today.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Let's fire it up. There he is, the heavyweight champ, Francis Ngannou, joining us live right now on First Take, looking very nice in the blue. Good color on you. And Francis, obviously, huge congratulations. But I want to ask you this. I was watching a video from your hometown in Cameroon and just watching everyone erupt. They were just so ecstatic. What does it mean to you? Obviously, you get revenge on Miocic, but also to be the heavyweight champ of the world and where you came from and to represent your country?
I mean, this a lot. This means a lot to me because at some point, it wasn't about myself anymore. It was about my family, my fans across the world, across the globe, and mostly for my country. You know, those people back there who might have a dream as I had and didn't have a chance and or opportunity, didn't take action, you know. So this is my own way to prove them that it's possible, you know, no matter what, to chase your dream and to achieve it. Doesn't matter how far you come, it's going to be hard, but it's still going to be possible. And because they know me very well. I'm not a story that they are reading in the book or somebody are telling them about me. I'm real, and I've been there with them. I grew up there. They know me as a person, as a kid. They know my family and everything. So he has more effect on that. And that is, I think that is the greatest thing about it, about all of this.
Francis, congratulations, man. And listen, a couple of things. Number one, I called your knockout on Saturday. I called it the greatest thing that's ever happened to the UFC, because when you're the heavyweight champion of the world and you come into the octagon with bad intentions, like Mike Tyson did in boxing, like George Foreman did before him, that's the greatest thing for a pugilistic sport. And that's what I wanted to say about that. And I love the fact that you had Usman with you, because I think that brother is a problem, as he says. He is something special. With that being said, you caught Stipe with a left hook that finished him off. He thought he had you hurt when he hit you prior to that, and then he came in and you caught him with the left hook. Did he stun you prior to you catching him with the left hook, or were you just deceptive and you made him think that he caught you and he hurt you a little bit?
No, he definitely touched me with that punch, but I wasn't hurt. You know, I was still very clear. As you said, I had Usman Camaro on my corner, who was a very good support for me emotionally and mentally, and even experience-wise. So he was there all the time to remind me how dangerous I am if I'm like if I calm down, if I collect my emotion and don't go crazy as I did the first time. And at that specific moment that I get punched by Stipe, I thought about that. I'm like, okay, don't go crazy. Don't let your ego take over. Like, reset, take time. You have 25 minutes to go. And for some reason, I think Stipe, he thought I was hurt or something. Then I saw him moving like recklessly. So that's when I count. He gave me the opportunity right there.
Congratulations, champ. You did something that's really difficult to do, to come back and exercise your demons against the guy who beat you when you were unbeatable, when you were the big favorite, and to psychologically deal with that, as you're describing, is something. I agree with Stephen A. that this has a chance to be what you did now, a turning point in the history of the UFC, in the sense that light heavy was always the glamour division. Brock Lesnar looked for a second like, can he be that guy at heavyweight? But he couldn't consistently stay at that level. You now have a fight maybe lined up with Jon Jones, because the UFC champion would beat the heavyweight champion in boxing in an actual fight. That guy's the baddest man on the planet, especially if he's a guy who fights like you. So this could be a turning point in the history of your sport. That's a tremendous achievement. I want to ask you, though, how are you able to do it? In the sense that usually a guy will talk a good game in a rematch about coming back and be doing things different, but in the heat of battle, they go back to what they do naturally. How are you able to employ all the things that you'd worked on in the heat of a moment, in the moment, against a guy who'd already beaten you?
Listen, Brian, that's a good point. And I want to point out the fact that the first time that I fought Stipe, I was just 4 years and a half in this sport, like 4 years and a half since the first day that I have been introduced to the sport. So I wasn't at the point that I can call something natural, you know. I was just learning, finding my sport, trying to understand the sport. And I think like with more time, basically with that fight, I learned a lot about that fight. who helped me to build myself and try to complete my profile as a fighter and to get better and better. You know, and it's kind of like weird, but at this point of my career, I think that is the very first time that I'm really starting to feel like I'm a mixed martial artist. First, I was just training to win a fight because, you know, UFC wasn't my, it wasn't like my biggest dream. Then I get the opportunity. I was like, okay, I should take the opportunity. Then I was training to win the fight. But hey,
champ,
now I'm having...
We don't mean to cut you off, but we're both dying to know your thoughts on a John Jones fight.
Yeah. The John Jones fight is a very interesting fight, and we've been calling that out for quite a while. I'm very interested and ready for that fight. And as I said, I'm ready for that fight. Whenever it is, I'm ready by July or August.
All right.
Stay ready so you don't have to get ready. And Ngannou ready to take on John Jones, who's moving up to heavyweight. Again, Francis, congratulations. You are an inspiration to every kid out there trying to defy the odds, fighting for something bigger than yourself. It's a beautiful thing. Your humility is refreshing. Enjoy the win. Thank you so
Best
much for the time
Best thing that's ever
today.
Happened to the UFC.
Thank you, Morgan. Thank you all. Thank you for the opportunity.
Congratulations, bro.